Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Revolution Radio this evening, where tonight we're going to be talking about the unconstitutional Obama. Remember, John F. Kennedy said, "Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable." And last night, there was a second shot heard round the world in Massachusetts, with Scott Brown taking a decisive victory. No chance for Acorn or anyone stealing the votes. It was a decisive margin, I believe, over 100,000 votes. welcome, everyone, this evening. I see in the chat room, let me see, we have guests. Welcome, guests. Hi, Paleo Troy. I believe we have Tenacity in there. Hello there, Mountain Goat. Hello. Thank you. Appreciate very much the work on your blog that you do. And welcome all guests from wherever you are. Tonight, just like to talk about a couple of things. I'm going to be putting out a few links. I don't know if our If our guests are here quite yet, I understand they're on another show. You can imagine everybody's working on this. So I'm going to put in a couple of links until they show up for you.
Hello, Dr. Kate. It's me, Mario Puzo.
Oh, Charles. Mario, wonderful.
Charles is here, too.
Oh, wonderful. Good evening, everyone. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great. Thank you.
Well, great.
Like,
well,
tonight's
the 1 year anniversary of the filing of your lawsuit, which you filed at 3 a.m. last January 2008, and your appeal was filed this year, yesterday. And, there's an educated audience here waiting to hear from you. And, Mario, I know you must be exhausted. Charles, you must be exhausted. Welcome. For our listening audience tonight, I want to tell you, I'd like to have just Mr. Puzo and Mr. Kirshner just talk about where they are and so forth for at least 30, 45 minutes. Then we'll take some questions. The chat room will be open. We'll be putting up some links in there as well. And we'll take a break in about 45 minutes. The other piece I wanted to let you know, this is one of the most important cases that could be dawning on the Supreme Court very, very soon, sometime this year, no matter what happens in the appeal. Consequently, there's a lot of work that has to be done. When you look at the materials, you will see how much work has been done. You also recognize the advertisement that's being done. So this evening, we're also going to try to make this a money bomb to help Mr. Kirshner and Mr. Puzo really, really make a home run here. So we'll be putting those links in. And without any further ado, welcome, gentlemen. I am pleased to have you here on Revolution Radio.
Thank you, Dr. Kate. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Kate, last year, you mentioned 2008. It was 2009. I have this calendar itis too. I mean, I forget. You know, when a year rolls over, you get confused sometimes. But we
it's
filed on January 20th, 2009. It was 2:50 a.m. in the morning, and Mario and I remember it very well, right, Mario?
Yes, we do, because we wanted to make sure we filed it before Mr. Obama was sworn in as president. We felt that was very important to do that. And we were right, because if everyone is familiar with Judge Carter's decision in California, he made a big point of that, saying that that was a critical factor in his opinion, because that goes to the redressability issue in standing, you know, whether or not the court can give a remedy. So that's why that was very important for us.
Very interesting. So that was filed at nearly at 2:30 a.m., and
no,
I understand
2:50, about 10 minutes
2:50.
To 3. 3 a.m. is close enough,
listen,
though.
Listen, you guys just go along. Now, it's been a long haul, and, you know, there were the usual suspects, if you will, of judges, and the usual reasons why they threw the case out. And your appeal goes directly to those things. As you know, the Continental Congress 2009 also took on the eligibility issue. But I'd really like to hear how you addressed the standing, the political question, the issue of jurisdiction, and the other reasons that were used to dismiss the case, which is why you're here today. So please carry on, gentlemen.
Dr. Kate, before Mario steps up here and explains all this that you just described, can I just mention that not only is this the anniversary of the first year anniversary of our filing this complaint against Obama, but also yesterday Mario filed a very important appellant's opening brief in the U.S. Court of Appeals Third Circuit in Philadelphia. So we have also that to talk about tonight, and Mario can probably maybe fill us in then a little bit on the steps of the appeal process, what happens next, do we get the oral arguments at some point, or are they going to make us do it all on paper? And of course, you mentioned raising funds, the website www.protectourliberty.org, and We currently have a fundraising drive there to raise $6,000 in January, and we've got about 2,200. We're about 3,800 short, and that's to go to help fund the print media blitz we've been doing last year, getting this to in the Washington Times, full-page ads, to educate people about this lawsuit and about Obama's issues. And I think we made a lot of headway with that, with the opinion makers who read that national edition of the Washington Times. So I think people will go to www.protectourliberty.org. We need the help. We need to raise that money. These advertisements cost a lot of money. And with that, I'll keep quiet and listen to Mario.
Thank you so much.
All right. Well, I'd like to start off with the issue of standing, and that's really been a thorn in everybody's side. It's very, very hard to really understand, although it's also very easy to understand. It's really a strange concept, but if you really study it and you understand what the courts are saying or trying to say, and what the purpose of what they're trying to say is, then you can start to understand the concept. Basically, our case was dismissed on the grounds of standing, and that goes to subject matter jurisdiction. Okay, in other words, if a plaintiff does not have standing, then the court doesn't have jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, so then the question is, what is standing? Well, standing has been something that's developed over time. It doesn't exist in the Constitution per se. You won't find that word in the Constitution, but you'll find the words case or controversy in Article 3. And very clever what the court did over the years in looking to those words and finding a way for the court not to get involved in certain matters. Now, why doesn't the court want to get involved? Well, there's different reasons. One reason is that they don't want to clash with the other branches of government. They don't want to rock the boat, you know. Let's keep things nice. No reason for us to upset anybody. We want a nice, peaceful life, you know. No political battles. Let's not upset the president. Let's not upset Congress. You know, they might cause trouble for us, that sort of thing. You know, it's pure politics, okay? Another thing,
they want to get appointed to a higher court someday.
Yeah, you know, it's really something because, you know, how do you create a perfect government, a perfect system? I mean, ours is not perfect. I mean, look what Charlie just said, and that's true, okay? A judge, you know, he has an interest in advancing his career, and he doesn't want to upset the apple cart. Is that a good statement? No, that's a terrible statement because you would think that the court, you're supposed to be independent. You know, justice is blind. You're supposed to sacrifice yourself for justice and for what is truth. But in the real world, it doesn't work that way. So you have over history, if you look at it, where the court it gives you standing, then it takes it away. You know, depending on the political environment. And one great example is during the New Deal era, when during the Depression, when things were really bad, and Roosevelt, you know, he wanted to put in these programs, and back then. We were closer to our constitutional values at that point, where, you know, unheard of, a government stepping in and taking over the economy. That was unheard of. You know, we had private property. We had, you know, free laissez-faire capitalism. And, okay, so, you know, the economy tanked, okay? But that doesn't mean that the government is going to step in and start, you know, running the show. So the courts were basically saying, you know, these programs are unconstitutional. You're infringing on private property. You're infringing on the power to contract. You're infringing on the capitalist system. The government is not supposed to have its hand in these things, okay, even though the economy tanked. And, of course, the president, he wouldn't hear of that. So he went to war with the court. And that's the famous what do they call that? Switch in time that saved nine. I don't know if you ever heard that expression.
Yes, so, that's where it originated then.
Yes, you remember that expression?
It was used on this guy.
Yeah.
So basically, what it boils down to is this: that the court decided to, you know, wait a minute, you know, we better start acting right here, or we're going to have some big trouble here with the executive. Because basically, you know, they were going to pack the court, they were going to do all these different things, and, you know, so basically, you know, all those judges ended up, like most of them, or all of them, they ended up retiring, and then you get all these new judges, okay? And then, of course, all the new judges, they go to bat for the administration, right? Oh, that law's good. Oh, that law's good. So there we start to create the social state, you know? The government that's going to take care of you.
The court is supposed to be the guardians of our Constitution, the fundamental law, and protect us from the usurpations of the other two branches. And they don't often live up to their oath in doing that.
Yeah, but that's the problem. That's what we're saying. You know, we have a great system. It really is. You know, three branches of government, separation of powers. All this sort of thing. I mean, it looks nice on paper, okay?
Mm-hmm. Independent judiciary?
That's on paper, right? Independent mm-hmm. judiciary. But then when you start getting into the nitty-gritty, you know, what really goes on? What really happens? And standing, okay? We're talking about standing now.
mm-hmm.
Standing is what brings it really, you know, to focus. It really
mm-hmm.
does, because that is a way for the court to say, no, we're not going to get involved in this thing. We're not going to step on the executive. The executive is supposed to do that. You know,
you told me one time, Mario, they can use the arguments of standing to take any case or reject any case.
Absolutely.
They can use it to hide or they use it to be aggressive.
I believe that. I believe that 100%. In other words, as soon as a case comes to the court, if the court likes the case, if they like it, they can justify standing. Okay, if they don't like it, they can say no standing. Now, what does that mean? Like it or not like it? Okay, it means what is the nature of the case? Is it a civil rights case? Are we talking about somebody who's been not allowed to go to school because of their race or because of their religion? Are we talking about somebody who's complaining because they want to have a gun in their house and the government says no, you can't? You know, are we talking about somebody who...
Or a hot potato by a Navy commander and an Italian lawyer down in New Jersey who say the Constitution is being violated by the usurper president.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Or here's a good one for you. Let's talk about condoms. That should get a laugh out of everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are we talking about that there's some kooky law that says I can't have condoms in my bedroom? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the nature of the action, okay, or the merits of the action, they have to be appealing to the court, okay? If they don't like it, they think, nah, this is a real real dog.
And when you say the court, you're talking about a human being reading that, and he's got emotions and fears and ambitions. That's who the court is. It's a person.
Yes, absolutely. And they'll justify it. They'll find... See, what happens is, now we start talking more about standing. Injury, okay? That's where we are now, injury in fact, okay? Now, it sounds like a right thing. I mean, it makes good sense. How could you have a case if you don't have an injury? Okay, that makes it seems to be logical. It seems to be something that makes good sense. But the problem is in the application. That's where the problem comes in, okay? Because you could have a cause of action, okay? In other words, you could have a way to sue, because let's say Congress says you can sue. There's a statute that says you can sue, all right? So you have a cause of action. But then the court says, no, we don't care that Congress says you can sue. We don't care. We're not going to let you be Mr. Private Attorney General who's going to go around and sue everybody because you don't like the way the environmental laws are being enforced, because you don't like that there's a project going on in Nevada someplace, and the snails are going to be hurt, and you don't live in Nevada, you live in New Jersey, and what do you care about what goes on in Nevada? That doesn't affect you, you see? So that's where this thing about injury comes in, okay?
When there's money involved, it's kind of clear cut, but when an oath keeper like myself says, hey, they're violating the Constitution, then they get...
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
They get wishy-washy.
Yes. Exactly. It's real simple for them. If you have a like if you broke your arm, okay,
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, well, that's real simple. You know, because who really cares that you broke your arm? Okay, well, you care, of course. Mm-hmm. And then the court's going to care because now they have a case that they have to deal with. And, you know, and that person's family and so on and so forth, okay? But do other people really care that you broke your arm? Is it a big, you know, is it going to be like some big news, like the, you know, the whole country's going to talk about how you broke your arm? No, okay? But if you're talking about whether the president is eligible to be president, well, everybody's going to talk about that. Everybody's interested in that, okay? So right away, it raises a red flag. It says, oh, wait a minute, this thing's too big. If it's too big,
especially if the majority at that point is politically against looking into it.
Yeah, well, because it's big. See, if it's big, it's got to be political. It has to be.
Does it get worse the higher you go?
That's a hard one. That's a hard question.
I hope not.
You know, because
actually, after you get to the Supremes, there's nowhere else to go.
No, I think it's easier I think in the sense of the trial judge, you're dealing with one person. Now we've got a panel of three. My opinion is that it's harder, I think, for personal feelings to enter in when you have a panel of three than it is when you have just one. And like when you get to the Supreme Court with nine, they're supposed to have gone beyond that. They're supposed to be able to stand aside and look at this for purely to defend the Constitution. But, of course, there are still people. I'm hoping that they live up to their oath.
You know, there are still people, and what comes with that, what Charlie just said? Perception, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Perception. How do they perceive this problem? Okay, do they perceive it to be an injury? Okay, and the problem with that question is that when you look at something as to whether it's an injury or not, you're putting into it your subjective, unstated standards or opinions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's unstated. See, that's the problem with standing, that the judge is putting in his own subjective ideas of what he believes is an injury. Okay, and then he's throwing your case out. It's not based on law.
And
it's
we can
based
look
on
the history, too, as to when the Supreme Court challenged FDR. What did FDR say I'm going to do? You either buckle under or I'm going to stack the court.
Right.
Put more members on and outnumber you. And there's no rule that says you have to limit it to nine. He could appoint six more if Congress would go along with it and stack the court.
Yeah. And so that goes to show you the battle that could occur between the executive and the judiciary. And they don't want that. The judiciary does not want that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. That's fine as an institutional standard. You don't want the branches of government clashing with each other because
mm-hmm.
The branches are supposed to work in peace. You know, I'm washing the floor and you're cleaning the windows, okay? And by doing that, we're getting the job done, okay?
But if
and
they don't do their judicial review and defend and support the Constitution and do their job interpreting it, we no longer will have a Constitution. The other two branches will just trample over it.
Yeah, that's what happens. If you have a certain power, okay, and then if you don't use it, then it's just as bad as if you used it when you weren't supposed to use it. It's the same thing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you have a function, if you have a function, you have to use that function when the need arises because the society is calling out for it, okay? It's like a natural process. It's almost like, you know, you have crops that are growing, and all of a sudden they're starting to dry up, and then it rains. And then, you know, nature provides what those crops need, okay? And it's like a delicate balance, okay? So if one of those branches, if they have a power, okay, and if they don't use it when the situation calls for it, then you've damaged the balance.
And that's the words of Chief Justice Marshall in the Cohen versus Virginia case of 1821. He said that you shouldn't take the jurisdiction if you don't have it, but if you do have it and avoid it, that's treason to the Constitution.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's where we could be at when we get to the Supreme Court. If they duck this because they're afraid of it, because it's, quote, too hot to handle, we won't have a constitutional republic left because the Constitution will be meaningless, because we're talking about three black letter written words in here: natural born citizen. that must be defined for history once and for all, regardless of who's sitting in that chair in the Oval Office. He happens to have usurped it, but if we don't define it, it's meaningless. It might as well, those words might not be in there. Might as well not be in there. And who was the person that said all the words in the Constitution mean something? Was that in Madison?
Marbury versus Madison.
Yeah. Now, Mario did a great job with the brief last night, 115 pages. He goes through case after case after case explaining all this, and the things I just cited are in there. And I would encourage all the listeners out there to get Mario's brief and read it, because he shows the law, chapter and verse, how the court erred. We do have standing. They could have given us standing with a snap of their fingers, but they're choosing to avoid it on purpose because it's a hot potato.
Yeah. Now I wanted to address why we think, you know, why do we have standing? You know, what is it about our case? You know, why are our plaintiffs, one of which is Charlie, you know, he's right here with us right now, why are they damaged? Okay. Our case is very unique. Okay. I mean, there have been cases along where citizens complained about appointments to the office and people in office, they complained about different things. And I mean, there's a bunch of cases, and I don't want to get into all these different cases in detail. I want to keep this, you know, user-friendly conversation type thing, okay? So let's just talk about, you know, what injury do we perceive we have, which is really the crux of this. I mean, that's the heart and soul of standing, is showing that you have an injury in fact, okay, which means that your injury is concrete and particular and actual or imminent, okay? So now, basically, concrete means it's not abstract. Particular means it's to you. And actual or imminent means it's happening right now. It's not some speculation in the future, okay? So all that, what I just said, goes to the issue of injury in fact, all that, okay? Once you get beyond all that, then you go to the next level, which is causation. In other words, did your harm, your injury, was it caused by what the defendant did? Okay, that's the second step. And then the last step is redressability, which is a big one. Because if the court feels that it can't give a redress, they're not going to give you a standing. They're not going to give you standing. Even if you have an injury in fact, you're not going to get it. And that's what happened with Judge Carter with the Barnett case in California. He went into redressability heavy, okay? Basically, he said, hey, I don't have power to do anything. You got a sitting president there. You sued after the election, after he was sworn in, you sued. And we have a sitting president, and basically he just, you know, shied away from it, saying that he has no power to do anything, okay?
But didn't he duck it in the sense that he was looking like the people were asking for him to directly remove the president? Maybe,
yes,
in their laws, but they were. In our case, we're asking for the definition of natural-born citizen.
Yes.
And the court's role. Their court's role is to interpret the Constitution.
Well, it's two different things. It's two different things, mm-hmm. Okay? When you're asking for a definition of a term like that, then that's called a declaratory action. Declaratory judgment is what you're looking for. Okay, when you're looking to remove somebody, then you're looking for a mandamus. Okay,
we have both in ours, but
yes,
they certainly could be addressing the defining the terms. They could do,
yes,
that.
Well, you know, here's the problem with Judge Carter's case. If you study the law, you can have just a declaratory judgment. That's redress right there. You don't you don't have to go to the next step and have mandamus.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need it. You see what I'm saying? In other
words,
if
we could get it defined and it's the way we say it is, we take that to Congress and say, now you act,
right,
on this.
Exactly. And that's redressability, you see? So that's why I don't agree with Judge Carter.
Exactly.
He over-exaggerated the whole thing to show that he has no power,
mm-hmm,
okay? But, you know, if he wanted to just to say, well, look, I can give you a declaratory judgment, okay? And then mm-hmm, that's redress, because then Congress has something to work with. Okay.
He also could have ordered discovery. That would be redress, too. But the final action of removing the president, he could have said, I'm going to give that to Congress then when I'm done.
That's right. That's right. He doesn't have to, you know, make a martyr of himself.
Right.
He doesn't have to. Okay. He could just say, look, here's my little gift for you. Here it is. And
right,
that's it. I'm done. You know,
here's a definition of natural born citizen based on our trial. here is all the evidence and documents that we've got subpoenaed in discovery from Obama. Now, Congress, you look at this, and is he violating the Constitution or not?
Yeah. So anyway, so that, see, I was skipping ahead to redressability, but let's talk about injury, okay? Let's talk about it. Why do we have injury in this case? Why? Because we're talking about the President of the United States and the power that he has. That's it right there. It's plain and simple, okay? Now, somebody might say, oh, well, how's that an injury? Okay, you know, I didn't get injured. I don't have any pain or anything. Well, the injury is that the president has enormous power, and every single day that he acts, he's impacting on the lives of everybody. Now, somebody might say, oh, well, that's everybody. That's a general grievance. Okay, that's the big flag. If there's a general grievance, then the court says, ah, no standing. Okay, and that was used in our case. Judge Simandl said that we only complained about a grievance. Okay, but I think with the president, it's not just a grievance, because he has an obligation to protect you, and that's really the key in our case, is protection.
And if he wants my allegiance, I've got to trust him.
That's right. That's right.
And I also took an oath to support and defend the Constitution, and I believe he is not supporting and defend the Constitution. In fact, he's violating it. So under the 9th and 10th Amendment, my inalienable right to stand up for my oath. And that's why I brought the lawsuit. I'm an oath taker.
Yeah, and you also have a right to protect yourself.
Exactly. Okay?
The Constitution says that the government cannot deny you life, liberty, or property without due process of law.
Right.
Okay.
And I wrote to my Congress and said, investigate this guy. They didn't. Other people wrote, investigated McCain. And they did. So that's unequal protection.
Now, here's my point. I'll make my point now. What if we knew that the president, not Obama, okay, I don't want to, you know, use him, but any president, what if we knew that he was a sleeper, okay? What if we knew that?
Okay? A deep mole. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was, okay, we found out about it somehow. Just assume that, okay? But the Congress, they don't care about it. Nobody knows about it, but there's certain people in the population that know about it, and they want to take action. They want to protect themselves because, you know, the guy's planning something really big, a big atomic burst of some sort. Mm-hmm. Okay, now does that affect those people that this guy is got this plan and he's going to undermine the nation? Okay, and he's not who he says he is. Okay,
but his role as commander in chief of the military. What about all the soldiers that are being sent in harm's way because of him? They could be accused of war crimes if he starts an illegal operation and they're there.
But now again, Charlie, we have to talk about our plaintiffs now.
Yeah.
Okay, our plaintiffs. That's you and that's the other plaintiffs. Okay. So
right.
the point is that what the president does. Okay. He controls the national security, and doesn't national security affect you? You know why? Let's go back to understand this issue. You got to go back to the founding fathers. Why did they put in the natural born citizen clause? It's called trust, okay? Mm-hmm. Because they wanted a person that you could trust there. Now, what does that mean? That you can trust him? It means that he's going to protect us.
He's going to protect us in our country. He's not going to betray us. He's not going to be worrying about some other country.
Exactly. He's going to protect you. That's what it means. It means he's going to protect your life. He's going to protect your liberty, and your
and
property,
my pursuit of happiness.
Well, of course, that's really the ultimate. Is that's the whole.
Constitution is the guarantor of the goals expressed in the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
The Declaration of Independence says we want life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and the Constitution is supposed to guarantee us the ability to have that. And we will not have liberty if we have a president we cannot trust.
Yeah, because you don't know who he is. You don't know who he is. You don't know whether he's planning something. You know, he's got troop movements.
Well, if he goes over and campaigns in Kenya for their elections for his cousins over there, his own actions make him untrustworthy.
Yeah, so how can we say... Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
The Continental Congress also felt that this was a national security issue, which boils directly down to trust. Who do we trust
to
defend us?
Yeah. So you know what?
And if he's following the Cloward-Piven strategy ideologically, he is out to destroy this country by wrecking the economy.
Now here's the clincher. Okay, if he's out to destroy the country, doesn't that include the plaintiffs in this case? Doesn't it include
Absolutely.
Them? Okay.
Absolutely.
So what? See what Judge Simandl did, which is I submit as an error, with all due respect to Judge Simandl, is that he said that even if our plaintiffs are injured, they're injured with everybody else. Everybody else is injured.
Yeah.
So therefore,
20 people get injured in a car wreck, nobody can sue because they all got broken arms.
Yeah, but see, here's the error in that. That's not what the law is. The law is that if everybody has a grievance, which does not rise to the level of an injury, then
I'm in the minority. The Constitution is supposed to protect the minority from the will of the majority. And the will of majority elected an ineligible candidate, violating the Constitution, and I'm the minority, the Constitution is supposed to protect me and my right to bring a grievance about that. And
well,
it's not.
Again, I know the First Amendment says grievance, uses that word, but we have to be careful when we use that word, grievance, okay? Because grievance almost sounds like a little, like, you're complaining,
well,
you know.
But protect my right to stand up under the Constitution and get a fair hearing in a court of law as to whether I'm right and he's violating the Constitution, or am I wrong?
Yeah, we have to talk about an injury. That's the test here that we have today. You have to have an injury in fact, okay?
Well, that's
so
under
the
concept of standing, but I still go back to the fact that standing wasn't in the Constitution, and we the people, the oath takers, we have an inalienable right to stand up and support and defend the Constitution. I know you've got to argue this in court, but I think when we get to the Supreme Court, they're going to look at that because they created standing and they have the right to bypass it.
Well, yeah, we don't know what they're going to do. Let's put
That's
it that
right.
way.
I'm
okay.
hoping that all this standing, I call it BS, that the court has created to limit people who can come and use the court system to get a hearing, to get their problems and issues addressed, are being used for political purposes to keep this all quiet and silence and hope will go away. And it's not going to go away because the Constitution is too important. And I'm just hoping that even if this appeals court doesn't recognize the historic nature of this court and that we have to protect Article 2, the bright line eligibility requirements have to be protected. If they aren't, you might as well throw the whole Constitution down and our country's doomed. We're just going to go down the tube.
Yeah. Again, you know, we have to focus on what the law is today. And then we don't know, of course, what the Supreme Court
will
do
right,
with it.
You're right,
but
when we get to the Supreme Court, they make law.
Yeah, they make law. We don't know.
And they can take this standing and say, hey, this was not meant to keep oath takers like Mr. Kirchner from questioning the eligibility of the president. And they can just wipe it aside and say we're going to take this case.
Okay, but of course, I argue that we don't have plaintiffs here with just general grievances, okay? It's not just some general gripe.
I understand you have to do this at this level, but I'm hoping, I pray to God, that if we lose on all these little nitpicky standing rules, that when we get to the Supreme Court, they're going to wipe them away and say this case has to be heard for historic reasons.
Well,
I'm just throwing that out.
Well, that's extra, Charlie. That's extra.
Right.
Okay, but you got to start. You got to have the minimum.
I know.
You got to get. Let's stick to the basics. Okay, which is injury in fact. Okay, injury in fact, and we've got an injury. We don't have just a grievance, a general grievance. We have a lot of people.
I read your brief, and I believe that you proved in there that we have all the necessary things the court should have taken this case.
Yeah,
you cited case after case after case. Lujan for one of them, right?
Well, that's the one that's used now. That's the Justice Scalia standing test, 1992, where he created this, what I just described, the injury in fact, causation, and redressability. Although, that existed prior to that, but now, whenever you talk about standing, you go to Lujan you have to have those elements, and it's very strict.
Let me go out of the box a second here. We just got a donation from $80 who wants to remain anonymous. Thank you for the $80 donation.
Oh, that's great. Let's talk about another issue. Okay, well, causation, that's easy. We don't have to talk about that because, that wasn't even in our case. Redressability, real quick there, that's whether or not the court can give you a remedy. And we say, yes, they can. They can do a lot of things. They can define natural-born citizen. They don't have to, personally kick the president out. They don't have to do that. Because our suit asks that the court work with Congress. They work together. It's not like
exactly.
like Judge Carter said, oh, I can't tell the president to get out of his chair and leave. I can't do that. Well, that's not what we're asking for. So, you know, we definitely have redressability the way we have the suit structured. But I think the next big issue that's really interesting for I'm sure for the audience and everybody is political question. Okay, that's a real big one. And again, when you talk about political question, you're going back to the same thing that you were talking about with standing, which is separation of powers. So this whole thing. Which is called, in general, it's called judiciability. I got hung up on the word. Justiciability, okay? Justiciability is basically separation of powers, okay, where the court doesn't want to get involved in what belongs to the other branches. So political question is the same thing. Now, in our case, in the Kirchner case, there was only one element of political question which Judge Simandl used, because there are different elements to it. You could get knocked out of the box on different ways, but he knocked us out of the box on just one way, which is that he said that the question of that we're raising is textually committed by the Constitution to a coordinate branch of government, which basically means that it's not his job, it's Congress's job. That's what he's saying, okay? And therefore, it's a political question because Congress deals with political stuff. The court deals with legal stuff, okay? And now, that's unbelievable when you think about it, because here we're suing Congress because they didn't do their job, and because they acted unfairly, because they investigated McCain, they didn't investigate Obama, they don't want to hear it, they don't want to be.
That same Congress told us to go to the courts, not to them.
Yeah. Yeah, the same Congress says, oh, the court's handling it. That's a legal question. That's what that's the Congress says.
A legal
says.
Question. You got to go to the court.
Legal question, right?
Exactly. Yes.
May I ask you, was your filing of your case at 2:50 a.m. on January 20th critical now to this issue of political question?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Because we sued a private citizen.
Yeah,
that's
it
right.
is. And also, see, political question is really big because that's also it sneaks into redressability also. See, all this stuff kind of meshes together. It's very complex because, you know, you think that you talk about one thing and all of a sudden you're talking about the same thing over again. But it's got like a different.
That's what Dr. K brought up, though. We have the only case that was filed after the political process was done. That's the confirmation hearings, the joint session.
But
he was sworn in.
It's a good point, and I raised it in my brief. And
exactly.
Also, it was raised in the California case, but unfortunately, the Judge Carter said, oh, no, you sued after the fact. So it didn't work there, okay? But in our case,
right.
I'm arguing, and I always argue this, that Obama is a private person. He's not another branch of government. You know, you're talking
Until
about a private...
Until
yeah,
he
you're
takes
talking
the
about
oath,
a private person.
Government.
He's a private person, although at that point he's a president-elect, but he's still a
right.
private person. And it's a private person who has to show that they qualify to become a public person. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
How's there a separation of powers problem? Where is the clash of branches of government when you when you're dealing with
The courts and Congress should be working together to properly vet a president.
Yeah.
Not pointing fingers at each other and say it's that guy behind the tree's job, not my job.
Yes, yeah, so you're definitely not clashing with the executive branch because he's a private person at that point.
Exactly.
Okay, so who's left? Oh, I'm clashing with Congress. Okay, well, how are you clashing with Congress? Because Congress, okay, under the 20th Amendment, Congress has one duty. Okay, and it's a ministerial duty. It's not a discretionary one. What does that mean? It means that they have to look.
We're not diminishing anybody's powers.
No,
we're
exactly.
Saying, are you eligible?
The only thing Congress can do by the Constitution, it says, wait a minute, is this guy old enough? Let's see, is he 35?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, check. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Wait a minute now, did he live here for 14 years? Is he a resident? Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, you know he lived. Okay, check. He's good to go, right? Last question. okay, is this guy a natural-born citizen? Oh, wait a minute now. You know?
Oh, yeah, wait. Let me look at my laptop computer here.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, there's a digital image on the Internet that everybody says is a forgery. Yep, he's qualified. Move on.
Okay. Now, assuming that Congress does that, okay, does that mean that nobody else can question that? That it was their job to do that, and that's the end of it.
They didn't even do that. They didn't even do that, though. They didn't even look.
Okay,
they refused to look. They looked for McCain, but not for Obama.
Okay, but here's the problem. The problem is that a natural-born citizen, that's not something that I thought I heard. Are everybody there? Hello?
I'm still there.
Okay. Natural-born citizen is a legal concept, and it requires a legal analysis and legal conclusion. Okay, so now the Congress, they really can't get into a although they did it with McCain.
They could have had a hearing on it. They could have had a hearing on it.
Yeah, they could have had a hearing on it. They could have got legal opinions on it, and they're acting to the best of their abilities. I mean, I can't fault them, if they're doing that.
They can hold a congressional hearing to find out the average number of peanuts grown on an acre in Georgia if they want to. They can have a hearing on anything. They chose to have a hearing on McCain because it was a political decision to harass him by the Democratic majority to make him kowtow to what they wanted. And they just gave Obama a complete pass because they were in control, and they controlled the Congress, they controlled the media, and they had lots of money, $1 billion coming from God knows where.
Yeah. So then the question becomes, can you double guess? Okay, can you go beyond Congress? Can the court do that when it comes to natural born citizen? Okay, or are they they're not a court. They're not a court.
Congress should have said, we need a legal opinion here and send it to the Supreme Court and ask them for a decision. And then based on that definition, then they should have had a hearing to get all the evidence about Obama, release all those papers, and then come to a conclusion.
Well, okay, let me just say something on that, Charlie. Now, see, the court cannot give advisory opinions, okay? And that also came up in with Justice Marshall. Where he was, I think it was Washington, asked for an advisory opinion, and
in a joint session of Congress, if they would have adjourned in the separate chambers to determine it, say there would have been objections, they couldn't have asked for a legal opinion on the meaning of natural-born citizen from the Supreme Court.
No, I don't think so.
A special session.
That would be an advisory opinion. That would be an advisory opinion. You have to have a case or controversy. We're back to that. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have to have a case.
Couldn't the have created a case or controversy instantly and took it to the court on an emergency basis, just like in the Florida election? My God, that got to the Supreme Court in 2 days.
Well, there was a case.
Yeah, but
there was
I'm saying,
a case.
Couldn't Congress have created a case on their behalf?
Yeah, of course, if they can. I'm not saying they can't create a case. I'm just saying you got to have a case. So if they can create one, that's fine. So anyway... So that's the thing about political question. I mean, it gets very, very interesting about, whether or not the Constitution says that only Congress can do this. Okay, that's really what Judge Simandl said. He said only Congress can fix this problem. The court can't fix it. So therefore, it's a political question. Okay, and that's where we are. I mean, that's the thing in a summary. And I want to give. Got questions or something,
In your brief, Mario, when you went through all of what you just said on the radio tonight, you ask a question, and I forget what page it's on, you say, well, if the court can't answer this question, who does? Because the Congress says they can't, and if the court says they can't, so how do you uphold the Constitution? You know what I mean?
Yes, and that goes back to what I just said. You're not going to ask the president whether he's a natural-born citizen. That would be a joke, right? I mean, you can ask him not as a legal opinion, you know what I'm saying? Just to see what he says. Of course, he's got to know whether he is or not,
Our prayer for relief in the original complaint you filed outlines what we want to happen, and that's we want the court to define natural-born citizen and hand it to the Congress and do something about it.
Yes, and it's not a political question because
it's a legal
thing,
question.
Yeah, it's a legal question. Congress does not have power to define natural born citizen.
Right. So
they don't have that power.
The court defines it and then holds a hearing on Obama's legal identity status and finds out if he matches the definition.
Yeah. If it was just a matter of applying some factors in a ministerial way, and the question was whether or not the person met those factors or not, and if Congress did that and there was no question about it, then that was it. That's it, okay? But with natural born citizen, that's a more complicated situation. That's a status. It's not like being 35 years old. All you do is just, you know, okay, when was this guy born? Okay, you count up the years, you get a little calculator, and you've got the answer. You know, I mean, that answer is right in America. It's right in China. It's right in South Africa. You know what I'm saying? The same thing with residency, although you could get into a little problem with residency, whether you have to have it continuous or whether you could have it in segments, you know, but I think that you could have it in segments. You don't have to, like, be here. You know, you can break it, in other words. Okay, so those are pretty simple things, but natural-born citizen gets more complicated, and Congress does not have the power to define it. They have the power to make the laws concerning naturalization, and they do that. They've done that starting in 1790. Okay, and then all through the years they've always made naturalization laws, and they keep making them, and they're going to keep making them. But none of those laws ever defined what a natural born citizen is, because that would make sense, even though they mentioned it in 1790, because that you know, how could a naturalization law make you a natural born citizen? It's a contradiction. You know, it doesn't make sense.
Well, natural born citizens are made by natural law. It's just something that's innately obvious to any culture, any person in the world. You're born of two citizens. You're born in that country, two citizens of that country. You're naturally a citizen of that country. You don't need a law to explain it. You don't have to go to a court to explain it. Any reasonable person
it's natural it's just natural without any law.
Yeah,
exactly.
And here's something else that gives you a really big clue on it. If Congress could define what a natural born citizen is, they can determine who the president is.
That's right.
You see? And the founders, they surely did not want that. They did not want the Congress in any way setting what the qualifications were for.
They wanted a person at birth who had no foreign influence. That's what John Jay's letter said. As much as possible, no foreign. So the only way you can have a child born with citizenship with no foreign entanglement is by natural law a natural born citizen who's both parent citizens and he's born in the country. So what are those Latin words, Julius soli and sanguis?
Right.
That's the only type of logical parameters that allow you to have a person with no foreign claims on them.
Both
parents are citizens, and you're born in this country. You are naturally a full citizen of this country with no foreign allegiances at birth. You're a natural-born citizen.
Yeah, we can get into hours with the natural-born citizen.
Vattel codified that, you know, and.
By
the way, I just got another donation from somebody who doesn't want to be named, but $90. Thank you.
That's great.
That's terrific. Hey, let me ask you, would this be a good time to take just about a 2-3 minute break? And we'll see if we have
I hope we can get some questions maybe, huh?
Yeah, well, if no one comes in with questions, I definitely have some. So why don't we take a 2-3 minute break, and please stay on the line, and we'll be right back. I think we're going to be playing a theme from The Patriot. For those of you who want to know, Michael Badnarik, the president of the Continental Congress, is actually out of the hospital, and I believe he's home or nearby. So let's take a 2-minute break, and then we'll just come back in a second. The call-in number for those who want to call in, 347-838-9176. Thanks. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Okay.
I don't know if we have an open mic, but we shouldn't probably talk if maybe we do. Wow. what did President Reagan say that time? Or somebody said the mic was open.
Oh, I forget what happened there.
Sorry about that abrupt start stop of that. We're not in the disc jockey business here on this show, but welcome back to Revolution Radio. Our guests are Charles Kirchner and Mario Apuzzo. This has been a terrific discussion, and I wanted to just recap before we went on to some questions that I do think we have. So the standing issue is really an issue of both proving an injury and also having redressability. And so I understand from reading your brief that you've done a very good job of actually addressing both and so forth. So is that a correct view of those two things?
Yes, yes. Causation also comes into it. Like if you're suing on behalf of a third party, then the court raises flags and says, oh, we're going to have problems with causation here or with redressability, like both of those, okay? But when you're suing for yourself and you're trying to show that there's a case just for yourself, then usually there's going to be injury in fact and redressability. Those are really the two that are going to knock you out of the box, those two right there. So, yes, you know, those are the crucial ones. And, again, you know, very, very easy. Think of it, redressability. Think of it that the court has to believe that it can do something because it doesn't want to embarrass itself. It's gonna, it's gonna say, wait a minute, I can't tell that guy what to do. Even if I say what I say, it's not gonna mean anything. So that goes to redressability and that's correct. And then of course we have the political question, which is a separate category. Okay, but political question is also in redressability. You see what I'm saying there?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Mario, could I ask you to take a minute or two to just briefly go through the appeals court steps? What's going to happen next? I know I don't know. Maybe there's a lot of other people out there that don't. You filed your appellants opening brief. I mean, you know, you let them know we're going to appeal. We appealed. Now you filed your opening brief. Now what happens next? And how does this process work? And do we get to oral arguments someday? How does it go from here?
Okay. Well, okay. I file what is called the opening brief. Now the defendants, which we know are be represented by the Justice Department with all their resources and their armies of lawyers and all the money they have.
Which they shouldn't be defending Obama, but we can't seem to stop them right now.
No.
Boy,
no.
Do I agree with that.
Yeah, no, I don't think they should be defending him either. But anyway, they're going to file what is called an opposition brief. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to tell the court, they're going to say, Apuzzo, he's wrong. Judge Simandl had it right, okay? Because this case, that case, this thing, that thing, you know, there's no injury here. This is a general grievance. All Americans just have a grievance. Nobody's really injured, okay? So they're going to argue that. They're going to say that the court doesn't have jurisdiction, that the lower court had no jurisdiction, that Judge Simandl made the right decision. It's a political question. Only Congress can deal with it. So therefore, affirm the decision of Judge Simandl. That's what they're going to say, okay?
And then you get a rebuttal chance?
Yeah, then I can file what is called a reply brief,
okay?
Where I say, no. They're wrong about that, and they're wrong about this, and they're wrong about that, and I'm right. So in other words, I take another shot at it, okay?
Right.
That's called the reply brief.
Mm-hmm.
Once that's done, then the court is ready to decide the case. And, they're going to take their time. They're going to read the briefs, and they're going to study them. And, they have their own internal procedure. They have all their law clerks doing research and finding every case under the sun and law review articles and books and this and that. You know, you could imagine the process. And then at the end, they can call you in for oral argument.
They don't have to.
No, they don't have to. Okay.
Can you request it?
Yeah, you can request it. You can request it. Of course, with something like this is definitely something to have oral argument on.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of an issue. And
now how long will the opposition take to file their opposition brief? Can they take a month, three months?
Oh, no.
No.
It's there's a briefing schedule.
Okay.
They have like 30 days. Yeah, they have.
Okay, so you filed yesterday. They get 30 days to file the opposition brief, and they'll probably take every darn last minute of it. And then you get to reply. And
yes.
What do you have? Two weeks?
Yeah.
About
15 days or so, 14 days. And then I have to check the briefing schedule. I don't have it off the top of my head right now, but that's basically what it is. Okay, that's it. Okay,
but I'm kind of hitting you on the air here. Maybe I shouldn't, but we want oral arguments, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
I want oral arguments,
yes,
so
yeah,
we're going to push for that, so that the audience knows that.
Yeah, and you could also ask for additional briefs, but you have to ask permission to do that.
Additional rebuttal?
What's that?
Okay.
Yeah, what is the procedure to make sure that you get oral arguments?
You have to ask for it.
Mm-hmm. And you've asked for it in this piece as well. We've asked for it all along.
Yeah, you have to ask for it. And
you got to formally ask for it, I guess.
Yeah. Also, the court can do it on its own. Even if you don't ask for it, they can do it sua sponte, it's called.
Okay.
Sua sponte.
But at the appropriate point in time, we are going to ask for oral arguments.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, Mario and Charles, we have a caller on the line, and I'd like to unmute him.
Before we take that, can I thank another donor for $50?
Yes, please.
Another anonymous one. These people don't want their name used.
Yeah, I know. We're all kind of shy.
The money's green. Thank you. And we need the financial help. We need the financial help.
Thank you very much, listeners. I'm a big supporter of this work. And, the Constitution is not a menu. You can't be after one of these other pieces and just completely skip over Article 2. In fact, I would argue it's just fundamental. So, caller 804, you're on the line. Could you let us know who you are and if you've got a question? Oh, caller 804 disappeared, I think. Well, call back. Please go ahead then. On the political question, aside from the fact that you filed this at the right time, and it's related to remedy as well, because the judge, as you said, it's just simply you can get a declaration and Congress and have to take a look at it. Are there any other pieces of the political question they're trying to sneak in? Like, for example, you know, you can't touch Congress because of their immunity, so forth and so on. Does that even come in at all?
Well, it comes in. Generally, it comes in. But what happened is that was argued in the case before Judge Simandl, but he didn't even touch that in his decision.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't give them immunity. He didn't give it to them. He didn't say that they had it. He didn't say they didn't have it.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, so that's not on appeal because he didn't decide that. By the way, there's something that I should add because I think it's important for everybody to understand that. What I discussed before about injury in fact and causation and redressability, that's called Article 3 standing. Article 3. I think I'm going to sneeze. Wait a minute. I was almost going to sneeze.
Even though the word standing is not in Article 3, that's where it is evolved out of. Correct.
Yeah, out of case and controversy. Those words are there.
Right.
So that's called Article 3 standing. Okay. Then there's another standing that's not real. It's not constitutional standing. It's like a court created, although Article 3 standing is also court created. But this is like an overall type thing. It's called prudential standing. Now, my God, think of that. You thought you had it bad enough with Article 3 standing. Now you've got another thing that's coming at you. That's now prudential standing is where, for example, if the court thinks, oh no,
it comes from the word prudent, right? They don't think it's prudent.
yeah, right. And now try to put standards on that. But on prudent, well, you know, what is prudent to me is not prudent to you is not prudent to them. I mean, you know, that
another
we're really out.
Escape hatch. It feels like it's another escape hatch.
Oh, absolutely.
It is. That's what Mario explained to me. They can escape out of any case they want to escape out of.
Yeah, it's not prudent.
It's not prudent.
And Mario, we have a caller now. I'm going to get this person back on.
Yes.
Let's see. Caller 804, you're on the line.
Hi, DK. This is D2I. How are you?
Oh, hi, D2I. D2I is a great fan of yours. Please go ahead, D2I. Hi.
Thank you so much. One of the things that I am wrestling with regards to this current complaint that you have filed, or case, I should say, two things. One is, when you talk about standing, and I certainly understand that over 35 cases have been dismissed on standing, I get the fact that trying to impress upon the judges that we have standing is a difficult task. But I am becoming, forgive me, but I'm becoming a pessimist. And the reason I'm becoming a pessimist is because I don't think the judges are ruling on law anymore. I can't help but have the feeling that the judges may be ruling from a place that may have nothing to do with the law and may have something more to do with their personal credentials that may be exposed if they dare say yes to you. And dare say, yes, this case will go forward. I have real concerns as to whether or not there is potential information out there with regards to these judges that may harm their careers, may harm their personal lives, may harm whatever, because I'm a political animal.
Let me interject something.
I'm not done.
Okay.
I'm not done. I'm a political animal, and I absolutely understand the fact that every judge is vetted, and I know there are files on every judge that is vetted. And in order for a judge to be able to attain a federal appointment, that judge must go through a very rigorous vetting process within the White House. And before they can say, yes, I'm going to appoint you, or yes, I'm going to put your name forward. Therefore, I fear, and this is my greatest fear, just because I do not trust this administration as far as I can throw them. My greatest fear is that evidence that has been produced within these files of these judges may very well be being used against them so that they remain mute and they continue to use the bogus complaint of you don't have standing. And how dare they do that? And shame on them. So, therefore, I can't help but feel like I'm on the other side of the legal quagmire that we continue to experience with regards to these cases, because I don't understand why these judges continue to deny. And, therefore, I have to go to the political element or the political side to see,
Well, let me tell you what I heard today. Somebody called Congressman Posey's office, the fellow who put up the H.R. 1503, and they asked him, because of the election up there in Massachusetts, isn't now the time to move on this eligibility thing with Obama, move stronger? And the staff person down there, I'm paraphrasing, said, and they brought up that Obama was born a British citizen, you know, that point, make sure that they were aware of that. And they said, yes, we're fully aware that Obama was born a British citizen, but we're not going to say anything about it because we feel it would be too disruptive to society. Now, this is in other words, fear of the unknown, fear of violence, intimidation. I think this is that this was put out at the end of the Bush administration and the start of the Obama administration by Homeland Security people and people like that. That, oh, you can't touch this. I think these judges, some of them know the answer already. They don't want to touch it because of fear of violence that may occur if the decision comes down to support the Constitution, and they don't want to touch it like a hot potato.
You know what?
Does that come into the prudence? Sorry, D2I.
No, that comes in of so much fear that you don't want to stand up when it gets tough. You chicken out, and Marshall and Cohen versus Virginia said you can't do that. You swore to defend the Constitution. You got to take the tough cases.
You know what? I respect that, and I honor that. However, it is an extremely racist statement to say that, and not because you're being racist.
Well, I didn't say it.
No,
that's what the staff member said at the congressman's office.
But I am saying to you, no, don't take offense. Please don't take offense. But that is an extremely racist statement because we have Project 21. We have so many African Americans, and forgive me, I'm going to call them blacks. We have so many individuals within the black race that absolutely are appalled by what is going on here. So therefore, the whole meanie or the whole message out there that Doug Wilder, my governor, former governor, my, thank God, former mayor, is gone, that put out on the street a year before, 8 months before Barack and all of the eligibility issues started to hit the mainstream, because mainstream isn't at all interested. But anyway, but before it hit the street, he said there will be riots in the street if we don't elect this guy. I have news for you guys, and I have news for anybody else that's listening to this radio show. Bogus, total bogus crap. I give so much more credence and so much more respect to that part of our population that says, you know what, I'm an American too, and I don't want to be screwed by this guy.
But do you know?
I don't want some bogus guy in there that's a usurper. They're no different from me.
Right. Did you know that the Bush administration called in the mainstream media and told them that? The Bush administration called in the mainstream media heads and said, you do not talk about this. There will be riots in the street. The Bush administration, outgoing Bush administration, did that.
Hey, but let me tell you about Bush. This is something I discovered today. Senate Resolution 511. You both know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
And anybody else on this call knows what I'm talking about. SR 511 that was passed by the Senate gave natural-born citizenship, bogus, meant nothing, to John McCain. Now, we also had a break-in at state. That break-in? No. So, therefore, they have this information, they being those individuals that signed on to that bill as patrons, as well as those individuals that broke into state, they have that information which they're holding over these people's heads. Forgive me, but Lieutenant Quarles paid a huge price for that. And I am not a citizen of this United States of America that I'm going to sit by idly and allow such corruptness and such...
We have it in our complaint about this is an injury that you can blackmail our president and you can blackmail people that keep quiet because they know the truth.
You got it. And that is what is going on. And I wasn't going to use the word blackmail, but by George, that is exactly what's going on.
That's
and
what it is.
Extremely disturbing. And damn, somebody's got to step up.
That's right. And also, I mean, D2I, thank you for raising that. And this is why I'm so.
Does she have a question for Mario?
Okay. Yes,
that's an excellent point, D2I, about that it's a racist comment to say that
that's
there's going to be violence. That's an excellent point, and that should be more brought to the public's attention. That's an excellent point.
Absolutely, Mario, because I've got news for you. My brothers and sisters, they don't want to riot in the streets any more than I want to. None of us want to do that. We just want a legitimate government. And so, therefore, we will fight that legitimate government on whatever issues we've got, negative or positive, whatever they may be, as we have done for generations. But to send out that message and to scare the individuals of this United States of America into believing that these folks, these good-hearted folks, would dare rise up and say, "How dare you do this to us?" No. Bogus. Total bogus. And I'm tired of the argument. And
you
I want someone. I don't care if it's the two of you, or if it's Dr. Kate, or if it's other individuals that are sitting there in the chat room, or people that are guests on this call. I don't care who it is, but somebody's got to finally stand up and say, no more. No more. Because, gosh darn it, these individuals, we're painting the whole African-American community as being, oh, they're all rebellious. Well, they're not. And
yeah.
That's just false meaning. And I don't
The press is enabling this. The press is enabling this all to happen.
You know what's incredible is that nobody's made that argument yet that I've heard. This is the first time that I've heard that, and it's an excellent point. It really is.
Well, thank you, because I'm just tired of it. These people, they're Americans. They want the same thing you and I want, and this division shit, excuse my language, has got to stop. Somebody said today on a blog, and it just so resonated with me, and that is the whole reason that folks are afraid of Beck and Palin and Brown is because we Americans are uniting behind them. And if we unite, then Americans have a voice rather than the division that the Democratic and Republican parties have both been driving home to our world for
well,
years.
Why is Beck mocking us?
Oh, I think Beck is not mocking you. I think
he is mocking the people who are challenging Obama's eligibility.
Okay, let me say this. I don't think that's occurring, and I think you're reading the tea leaves wrong. And I wrote this the other day, and others have chimed in. And that is, if you listen to his show on Monday night, which I don't listen to his show often, so please forgive me. But I don't listen to a show often. But I did tune in. I went to the realbarackobama.com to tune in because that's I get to pick and choose what clips I want to watch back on their blog site. But I went to a show and he was talking about how conservatives or individuals that dare oppose or bring up anything negative about Barack Obama are being ridiculed and being called names, et cetera, being called stupid, being called idiots, et cetera.
But he called the guy who called in to talk about Obama's British citizenship, he called him stupid on the radio show.
Okay. I believe that what he was basically trying, and this is just me, so please understand where I'm coming from. I believe he was trying to say to us, to those of us that know it's not bullshit, to those of us that know it's a very real issue, because Barack Obama himself has said it's a real, very real issue, to his credit. I believe what Glenn was basically saying is that, you know, all of us conservatives or all of us Tea Partiers or all of us people that don't agree are just stupid and idiots. And he was just, I think there was snark in there, but I think he kind of blew it. Because if you watched his show on Monday night of this past week, he explained how people that dare challenge anything about this administration, including his nativity story, which is you and I know is total bogus, you know, were called idiots, birthers, whatever. And so I believe he was trying to send out a message, and he flunked. And I absolutely believe he failed at trying to deliver the message that, you know, we're not stupid. You people are the ones that are the wise ones. You guys are the ones.
We are the ones that have that have created this Tea Party movement, although it's being totally now moved over into a tax-only movement. They want to push out the people who want to challenge Obama on other issues like the eligibility issue. But we are the people who built the pressure that's going to blow in this year in the elections. Everything about Obama is phony.
I would say to you that I think it's going to blow sooner than the election.
I hope so. I hope he's out sooner rather than later. Legally, I want him out. Legally, in handcuffs. I want to see him do a perp walk.
I'm with you all the way.
Mario, and D2I, thank you very much for raising some really important points. And Mario, if you were able to get an oral argument on this, would you also bring that in terms of, you know, really how fundamentally wrong that is? Because a lot of people, in my view, are ducking from it just because of that. And you know,
you mean the racial
quiet.
Intimidation
yeah.
part, the racial
yeah.
and then the threat of violence.
Yeah, I wonder.
Mm-hmm.
If you had an oral argument chance, would that even come in?
Well, you know, it's not really a legal argument. But first of all, you know, how do you prove that in a court? Usually, when you're in a court, you have to have evidence of anything. So so what am I going to say? I'm going to say, well, there's talk on the street that, you know, and then the judge is going to say, Mr. Apuzzo, you know, you talk on the street, you know. That has to come in because
now,
it is.
If the judge would ask you a question in your arguments, why do you think everybody's been silent in the press about this? Would that be an opportunity then to come back that way?
I don't think the judge would ask that kind of question. It's, you know,
okay.
See,
right.
the legal process is very, very strict.
You know how many times I've been in a federal court, Mario? Zero.
You're the expert. No, you're absolutely okay. I mean, the problem is that you just can't go into a courtroom and start talking about politics and giving your opinions about this and that he's a leftist or he's a communist or that sort of thing. You know, I mean, a lawyer that has years of experience and knows how the law works, you just can't do that. It's not a legal argument.
We got to always go back to say our complaint is a legal question.
You can't. It's not. You know, even though there's politics involved, okay. And why is it involved? I mean, you know, political question. I mean, what is that telling you, right? It's
because your government turns out when it gets down to it, your government is all about politics. But he's got to play by the rule. He's got to play by the rules of that government, which is the fundamental law is the Constitution. You can't win the football game by grabbing the other guy's protective visor and throwing them to the ground. You got to play by the rules. Same way in politics, you got to play by the rules, and the Constitution is part of those rules.
Yeah, you know, even when you talk about a political question, okay, what happens there is there's actually, before I was saying that there are different elements to it, and I mentioned one, and that is whether the problem is textually committed by the Constitution to one of the branches of government. In other words, it's their job, it's not the court's job. Okay, that's the best one to deal with, because that you can actually you have a standard. You can actually study the Constitution, look at it, and see what it says, and you can make a legal argument. Okay, but the other factors get so vague. Okay, even to the point where one of the factors, it says that if the decision will cause embarrassment. Now, mind you now, embarrassment to the other branch of government, potential embarrassment for, and the word is multifarious pronouncements by various departments on one question. In other words, you have the different organs of government saying different things, and if the court is going to embarrass the government, can you imagine? This is ridiculous. This is how ridiculous
it is. But we got a situation here. In a football analogy, we have an ineligible player on the field, Obama, and he made it across the goal line, and he does not get to win the game just because he did that. He's an ineligible player, and even though he got sworn in and made it across the goal line, he broke the rules, and he needs to be removed constitutionally.
Well, yes, that sounds all nice and dandy, but...
but you got to do it in a court of law. I understand. That's where you're the champion. You're the constitutional lawyer.
Mario.
Oh, thank you for another $50 from Jean Ann. Thank you.
Mario.
Yes.
Mario, one of the advantages you do have is you will have private conferences with the judge. And there will be conversations held about whether or not riots in the street, blah, 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 blah. Please, I beg you, tell them there aren't going to be riots in the streets. That's all just... That's all scare tactic. And I know Doug Wilder. I know him well. I live here in the state. I know who that man is. And I also know if there's riots in the streets, it's going to be from the progressives. It's not going to be from the good guy that lives down
and
the
our street. Police can take care of it, and we cannot let violence control the law. Violence cannot overrule the law. That's
and
anarchy.
That intimidation factor is just so wrong. And it's terrible to paint the African-American race in this country in such a light. It's just wrong. And I find it appalling, and I find it extraordinarily disturbing. And I for us white folk, for lack of a better word, to buy into that is just,
Do you know anybody at Congressman Pelosi's, at Congressman Posey's office? Congressman Posey's office. Somebody down there is the one that said it.
Yeah, it's a disservice to our people. All of us live here. All of us want the same things. We want to raise a family. And
the congressman is afraid to go further on this issue because of fear of repercussions and violence.
You got it. And
that is
wrong.
It's wrong.
It is. And this is really a very interesting point. We're down to about 2 minutes remaining. And D2I, and do you have a final question? And I'd like to give both Mario and Charles a chance to just make some final comments and tell us where we go next. And we hope that you're on again.
Oh, I have so appreciated this tonight. This has been a wonderful, wonderful show, Dr. Kate. And I thank you. And the only question I have, and then I'll hang up, is, Mario, what are the chances of your suit actually being heard? Because if your judge is being blackmailed, we've got to know that judge is strong. And
we've got 90 seconds, folks.
Okay,
got a panel of three judges this time.
Yeah.
Three.
Yeah, I can't go by thinking that they're being blackmailed and they're going to rule against me because of that. I have to go with the law, the facts, and make my best argument and hope for the best. That's really what that's the only thing I can do. That's the legal system, you know. You got to present your case and hope for the best and hope that the judges are honest and they're not, so to speak, paid off, that sort of thing. But That's where
it
is.
The winner loses going to the Supreme Court, right, Mario? Because if we win, they'll take it to the Supreme Court. If we lose, we'll take it to the Supreme Court.
Yes, yeah. Either way, it's going to go to the Supreme Court. Whether the Supreme Court takes the case, that's a different question, of course.
Right.
Well, thank you very much. Please keep going. We can go through the evening. And
well, I'm persistent. I'm a naval commander. I am not discouraged. Damn the torpedoes! Full speed ahead.
Yes, and
Alan Weston's charge. Mario, please go ahead. What were you going to say?
Yes. What I want to say is that. Again, you know, this is a, even though we don't want to admit it, it's a political situation. You know, overall it is, okay, but it has legal components to it. And the court has to focus on the legal aspects and have the courage to handle those and put aside the political ramifications of it, because there are legal questions here, and it's important that the country know what a natural-born citizen is, because we're going to have that come up with Bobby Jindal. You know, they're talking about
That's
him...
Right.
You know, and here we go again. So it's an important issue for the country, and it also goes to the psyche of the country too. I think it has it's a family issue also, because you're talking about parents, mother and father, citizens raising their kids, you know, rearing them with the values that you want. So it's a really good issue. It's not a racist issue. It's not a divisive issue. You know, it's a family issue. It's a strong issue. It gives strength to a country.
And the question of rule of law.
Yes.
Absolutely. And thank you both, gentlemen. Thank you for your work, your service to our country.
And thank you, Dr. Kate, for all you do on the blog to help support our case. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much. We'll have you again. And absolutely, we're with you 100%.
Thank you, Dr. Kate. Thank you. And all your listeners.
Okay.
Good night.
Thank
God
you.
Bless
Good
you
night.
All, and God bless America. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Good night.